In the early 1970s, a redheaded stranger with a grandfatherly smile emerged on the world stage from seemingly nowhere. He was a man out of time in braids and a bandana, both a hippie and a cowboy, and a symbol for the changing face of America. This is the story of an ambitious man who got lost chasing the American dream, only to find himself back home. This is the story of Willie Nelson.
A preacher, he's since passed on, he used to tell me that the first song that he ever remembered me singing was Amazing Grace. And that was when I had to have been 6-7 years old. There's something about the melody, the vibrations, whatever goes on there, that kind of goes to the bone.
Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson, gets underway in just a moment. The program you're about to hear was first produced for broadcast on the occasion of the 75th birthday of Willie Nelson. On April 30th, 2013, Nelson will mark his 80th birthday, still going strong. In celebration, Texas Music Matters offers an encore presentation of the award-winning biography, Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson. It was almost a half century ago. Willie Nelson loaded his guitar into his ragged old Buick and set off for Nashville. He was only in his mid-20s, but he had the weary face of a much older man. In the rearview mirror, his past seemed to disappear. His unhappy marriage, his itinerant life as a honky-tonk musician, and that place he used to call home, Texas. In Music City, Willie was hoping to find the happiness that seemed so elusive, the success he felt he was destined for. Not long after arriving in Nashville, he landed a job in the music business. $50 a week, writing songs that would make others rich and famous. In a tiny room, he would sit with his guitar, turn on his tape recorder, and capture the ideas as they came to him.
Just watch the sunrise on the other side of town. Once more I've waited, and once more you've let me down. This would be a perfect time for me to die. I'd like to take this opportunity to cry.
This is the Willie Nelson only a few people knew, and even fewer remember today. But to a person, they'll tell you that despite appearances, Willie Nelson never really changed much. At the end of the day, it was always about the music. From the studios of Texas Music Matters at KUT Austin, I'm David Brown, and you're listening to Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson. For the next hour, we'll explore the little-known story behind the rise of an American legend. This is a story that begins in Abbott, Texas, a tiny farm town just south of Dallas, at the height of the Great Depression.
In Abbott, there were four churches, and I lived within 100 yards of three of them, and there was a tabernacle that was just as close as from this, where we're sitting, to right out there. Where every summer I could sit there and hear every denomination in town come do their revival meetings, where they would come and sing gospel and the guy would preach every night. So I got preached to in every denomination every summer. And so I grew up in all that kind of stuff, and it was really great. On Sunday, there would be early morning Sunday, and then at noon, sometimes we'd have all-day singing dinner on the ground type thing. So it was all-day church on Sunday. And then Monday night, I think, was prayer meeting night. Wednesday was visitation, where you go around and visit people and try to get them to come to church. And then next thing you know, it's Sunday again. So the whole week was pretty much spent in church.
No wonder we like to sing sometimes, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
A preacher up there in Abbott, he used to tell me that the first song that he ever remembered me singing. And that was when I had to have been 6, 7 years old, was Amazing Grace. I really don't know how and why I started singing. I love the song, and I would sing it every night. There's something good about it. I'm sure it's a combination of all the things, saying the words, feeling the music. The melody has that universal appeal. Love that melody.
I was actually about 2.5 years old when Willie was born. And it's always just been Willie and I and our grandmother and grandfather.
Bobby Lee Nelson is Willie's older sister and lifetime musical partner. In 1933, shortly after Willie was born, their teenage parents abandoned them. Bobby and Willie were raised by their grandparents, who worked the family farm in Abbott and taught music in their spare time.
Oh, he was the sweetest thing in this world, and still is, but he was the sweetest child. A lot of the time it was only just he and I, because our grandmother's working in the fields, and we spend most of our lives playing the games that we made up, and we started learning to play music so very young because my grandfather was so interested in us learning to play music. And when our grandfather got us a radio, we got electricity in that old house before he died. He got us a refrigerator and the electricity and a radio. This radio brought the rest of the world and the music to us. We spent our lives listening to this radio and learning music from the radio.
This is XCT, Monterey down Mexico way. And here's that original Carter family to do a little singing for you. Keep on the sunny side.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life.
We were always learning the music. Always learning a song. We spent our lives playing music, is what we did.
Willie was raised to do what he's doing.
Music historian Joe Nick Potoski, author of Willie Nelson, An Epic Life.
Bobby and Willie were stars in Abbott because whenever it came time for any kind of music at the school, they'd bring them out because she could play piano and he played guitar. He was given a guitar at the age of 6. I just think all those factors inform who he is today.
But before Willie Nelson would become who he is today, he'd have to leave Abbott. As a teenager, there was a fateful moment on one of those hot summer afternoons.
I spent all my summers picking cotton. And a lot of that time was along the highway that ran through Abbott, and I'd be out there in the hot weather picking cotton and pulling my cotton sack, and I look over on the highway and there goes these big air-conditioned Cadillacs going by. I said, someday I want to be over there where they are. And I think that was the catalyst that really got the moment that I realized that I didn't really want to stay in Abbott and pick cotton all my life.
Music would be Willie's way out of Abbott. Destination? Who knows where? He played the honky-tonks, but there wasn't much money in it. Then he tried selling Bibles, vacuum cleaners. He even found some gigs as a DJ, first in Dallas, then outside of Portland, Oregon, where his mother lived. The station was KVAN. He was hyped as Texas Willie, the cotton-picking, tobacco-chewing, stump-jumping, gravy-sopping, coffee-pot-dodging, dumpling-eating, frog-gigging hillbilly from Hill Country, Texas. Biographer Joe Nick Potoski.
The sales jobs through the 50s that he took out of desperation so he could support his music habit really taught him how to get out there, because it's not enough to be a great writer. It's not enough to be a great musician. It's not enough to be a great singer. You got to sell yourself.
In fact, Willie used his radio show to sell his first records. What you're about to hear is among the rarest of Willie's recordings from 1957. This is an original composition called No Place for Me.
Your love is as cold as the north wind blows and the river that runs to the sea. How can I go on when your only love is gone? I can see this is no place for me.
light in your eyes is still shining. It shines, but it don't shine for me. It's a story so old, another love grown cold. I can see this is no place for me. It shines, but it don't shine for me. It's a story so old, another love grown cold. I can see this is no place for me.
Though it was a complete do-it-yourself job, Willie sold out of his first batch of 500 records. He ordered up another 2,500 copies and sold all those too. But at $1 a piece, he couldn't even cover his costs. Financially, he was still at square one. Willie and his family packed their bags and wound their way back to Texas. In Houston, Willie signed his first real record deal with Harold Pappy Daly of D Records. His first two singles? Complete flops.
What a way to live.
Willie was desperate for money. He tried giving guitar lessons, tried selling some of his songs. One of them was a gospel song called Family Bible, which he sold for $50 to a local singer named Claude Gray. One day, Willie turned on the radio and was stunned to hear what came out.
There's a family Bible on the table.
It was the song that Willie sold in desperation for $50, virtually giving away a song that would become a number one hit nationally.
But the family Bible on the table will ever be my key to memory.
Though Willie didn't get any songwriting credit, this was a huge boost to his self-esteem. Now, he knew he could write a hit record. According to Gary Hartman, who directs the Center for Texas Music History at Texas State, Willie was on his way to a gig one night in Houston when inspiration struck again. It was a song called Nightlife.
Pappy Daly at D Records in Houston, who had already recorded several of Willie's songs, Pappy Daly refused to record it. He said, it's too bluesy. It's like a blues song. It's not a country song. I don't want to record it. So Willie snuck off and had some other small label record it, and he didn't tell Pappy about it, didn't want to make Pappy upset. So even at that early stage, you see that Willie is not going to be constrained by the conventional parameters of country music. He's going to do what he wants to do regardless.
When the evening sun goes down, you will find me hanging round. The nightlife ain't a good life, but it's my life.
The short-haired, clean-shaven man behind the microphone looked nothing like the bearded and braided Willie Nelson we know today. But all the important elements are right here. The jazz phrasings, the blues influences, the first-rate guitar playing, and something else, too. It's a kind of musical audacity. This is a country song unlike anything on country music radio in 1960. And at first, Nightlife doesn't go anywhere, but Willie Nelson knows that he's on to something. So, it's on the road again. Next stop, Nashville. Our special Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson, continues in just a moment. Stay with us. From Texas Music Matters at KUT Austin, I'm David Brown, and you're listening to Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson. When Willie Nelson arrived in Nashville in 1960, he had yet to make a name for himself. With little more than a notebook full of songs and a whole lot of ambition, he landed his first real gig as a professional songwriter. His tiny box of an office became the inspiration for a song that would change everything.
Hello, walls.
Hello.
How things go for you today? Don't you miss her? Since she up and walked away.
In the spring of 61, Farron Young's recording of Willie's Hello Walls stayed at number one for 9 weeks, earning the budding young songwriter a $20,000 royalty check, a sum then equivalent to 10 years of Willie's regular wages. Willie tracked down Farron Young and gave him a big kiss on the lips. This was the start of a period of tremendous songwriting success. Next came a song Patsy Cline refused to sing until she was presented with Nelson's original demo version.
Crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new.
Biographer Joe Nick Petoskey.
Traditional country people complain because you're supposed to sing on the beat. And Willie was already screwing with that, hanging back. The jazz guys got it. And some of the Nashville players got it because a lot of them were actually jazz players. But he was outside the box then.
Wondering what in the world did I do? Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying, crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew that you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the world did I do? Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying, crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
As Patsy Cline was climbing the charts with her version of Crazy, another of Willie's songs was scoring big for Billy Walker, a song called Funny How Time Slips Away. Even with the glossy Nashville treatment, the underlying song seems to borrow as much from popular jazz as from traditional country music.
Well, hello there. My, it's been a long, long time. How am I doing? Oh, I guess that I'm doing fine. It's been so long now, and it seems that it was only yesterday. Gee, ain't it funny how time slips away?
Willie Nelson was quickly establishing himself as the hottest new songwriter in Music City, and no one was more impressed than his hard-to-impress boss, the legendary Ray Price.
When the evening sun goes down, you will find me hanging round. Oh, the nightlife ain't no good life, but it's my life.
Price took Willie's song Nightlife, gave it a cool uptown treatment, and turned it into a number one crossover smash. But more than that, Ray Price took Willie under his wing.
Yeah, I was in Nashville. He came to work writing for our publishing company, Pamper Music. And he'd been with him for a while, quite a while. Of course, he was getting paid so much money a week, but it wasn't enough, really, because he had a family.
Willie could use the extra money, but his ego needed something more. For all his success as a songwriter, Willie Nelson was virtually unknown as a performer. He craved the spotlight. When a position opened up for a bass player in Price's band, the Cherokee Cowboys, Nelson quickly offered his services. Never mind that Willie didn't really know how to play bass.
In fact, we got home from a tour, he said, "Bet you didn't know it, I couldn't play bass." I said, "The first night."
Yeah, when the evening sun goes down, you will find me hanging around. Well, the nightlife ain't no good life, but it's my life.
Willie's about as good a person, I guess, I've ever met.
Willie has consistently had his eye on the prize. When he's working with Ray Price, he's figuring out, you know, hey, Ray's got the good gig. All throughout his Nashville days, he's kind of watching how others do it. How does a front man become the front man? He liked the attention.
But he wasn't getting a lot of it. Liberty Records producer Joe Allison was ready to gamble. He was impressed by Willie's talent, his distinctive sound, but perhaps most of all, his ability to write hits for other artists. Allison signed Willie to his own record deal, despite the fact that no one was quite certain Willie could have a hit if it were just his name on the label. That would change with this song, which broke the top 10 in 1962.
Touch me, touch the hand of the man who once owned all the world. Touch me, touch the arms that once held all the charms of the world, sweetest girl. Touch me, maybe someday you may need to know how it feels when you lose. So touch me, and you'll know how you'd feel with the blues. watch me. Watch the eyes that have seen all the heartbreak and pain in the land. And be thankful that you're happy though standing so close to the world's bluest man. Don't forget me. Take a good look at someone who's lost everything he can lose. Then touch me, and you'll know how you'd feel with the blues. Don't forget me. Take a good look at someone who's lost everything he can lose. Then touch me, and you'll know how you'd feel with the blues.
Touch Me gave Willie a nice ego boost, his first hit record, but not much else. After two albums, no big follow-up singles to speak of, Liberty dropped him from the label. Chet Atkins at RCA recognized Willie's talent and scooped him up, but the result of this partnership left a lot to be desired.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness, so much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the year.
He gets one top 10 hit with RCA, a song called Bring Me Sunshine, which is like Willie singing like Bobby Darin. And why that was a country hit and why it made the top 10, I don't think he could explain, much less me.
Up above, bring me fun. Bring me sunshine, bring me love.
It was just weird.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
In Nashville, in the effort to sell records and make money, you do different things. And you think, well, you know, maybe if I put a bunch of voices and strings on it, they'll think it's pop. Somewhere along the way, it kind of got mixed up, and it was hard to figure out what happened to the traditional country music.
He had a lot of built-up frustration.
Well, I gotta get drunk, and I sure do dread it, 'cause I know just what I'm gonna do. I start to spend my money calling everybody honey and wind up singing the blues.
A lot of people around, including his drummer Paul English, his third wife Connie, his eldest daughter Lana, have told me that he could be really mean when he got drunk, and he wasn't a good drunk. There were a lot of holes in doors and in windows that were smashed, and when he'd drink and get drunk, he'd take it out on himself or other people. He wasn't a pleasant guy to be around.
There's a lot of doctors that tell me that I better start slowing it down. But there's more old drunks than they are old doctors, so I guess we better have another round. Jimmy Day.
It's not that Willie wasn't successful in Nashville during the 60s. He was, in many ways. He joined the Grand Ole Opry, became a regular on Ernest Tubbs' TV show, and the royalty checks kept rolling in. He bought Ridgetop, a 200-acre ranch outside of Nashville. But artistically, well, things did seem out of whack. Willie was still the short-haired, buttoned-down, conservative-looking country singer on the outside, but in his private life, it was getting pretty messy. He wrecked almost half a dozen cars, he was losing money with his tours, and his marriage was becoming unglued.
If you can truthfully say that you've been true just one day, well, that makes one in a row, one in a row, one in a row. And if you can look into my eyes one time without telling lies. Well, that makes one in a row, one in a row, one in a row. Why do I keep loving you? After all the things you do, and just one time come into my arms, and be glad that you're in my arms. That will make one in a row, one in a row, one in a row. That will make one in a row, one in a row, one in a row, one in a row, one in a
But for
row.
All the turmoil, both on vinyl and off, there was a kind of imbalance that went much deeper. Willie Nelson still felt the tug of Texas. That's where he had the biggest following. It was where his sister was, where his heart was. And so slowly, he began to reevaluate things. He'd come to Nashville a decade earlier, seeking fame and fortune. And he'd found fame of a sort. He was respected as a songwriter, if not so much as a recording artist. He had enough money, nice place to live. Still, something was missing. Something wasn't right. On Christmas Eve, 1970, while Willie was at a party in Nashville, fire struck at his Ridgetop Ranch. The flames consumed almost everything of value that he owned. By almost every measure, it was a devastating event. And yet, this was an event that was almost baptismal. In losing everything that materially tied him to Nashville, he was free. Nothing to lose, no one to impress. And all of a sudden, quite a lot to say.
Shotgun Willie sits around in his underwear, biting on a bullet, pulling out all of his hair. Shotgun Willie's got all of his family there. Well, you can't make a record if you ain't got nothing to say. Can't make a record if you ain't got nothing to say. You can't play music if you don't know nothing to play.
Shotgun Willie had lost it all, but he was about to gain so much more.
You know, I let my hair grow and go into truck stops just to see what would happen. And it was kind of fun to go out in front of the Grand Ole Opry with braids and a bandana just to see how they would react. I still enjoy getting those reactions from people. You look outrageous.
The interesting shift in his personality has probably been the switch from alcohol to marijuana. He made the conscious decision, pot's the way for me.
Coming up, the birth of an outlaw and the beginning of an American legend, as our special, Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson, continues. Stay with us. From Texas Music Matters at KUT Austin, I'm David Brown, and you're listening to Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson. In 1960, Willie left Texas in search of the good life and never quite found it. By the early 70s, he'd lost his house, his RCA record deal, and he was losing his marriage. But things were about to turn around in a big way.
Well, it's been rough and rocky traveling, but I'm finally standing upright on the ground. And after taking several readings, I'm surprised to find my mind still fairly sound. I thought Nashville was the roughest, but I know I've said the same about them all. We received our education in the cities of the nation, me and Paul.
He moves back to Texas.
Michael Hall, music journalist for Texas Monthly Magazine.
Up to that point, great, great, great songwriter, but completely undistinguished recording career. You know, he'd been a pig farmer, he'd been married a couple of times, he had some kids, nothing was going on, but he comes back to Texas and all of a sudden, in some ways through happenstance, but in some ways I think through his own vision, he starts seeing the way that the hippies and the rednecks down here in Austin, these long hairs and these cowboys are starting to come together over country music.
Well, I found a group of people down here who felt and thought pretty much the way I did about everything, and very liberal, which I'm very proud to be a liberal peacemonger, which somewhere along the way became a bad word, but I'd enjoyed being around them, and I played all kind of places. I would play Big G's out in Round Rock, which is a big redneck cowboy joint, and then I played the Armadillo Club, which was the exact opposite, but they were liking the same music. And the cowboys at Big G's liked to hear Hank Williams, and the long-haired hippies over at the Armadillo liked it. So I felt like I had the best of two worlds.
But I don't think they even missed us. I guess Buffalo ain't geared for me and Paul.
Willie settled in Austin with longtime members of his band, including drummer Paul English. His sister Bobby was here, and they'd never leave each other's sides again. But in many ways, Austin was an improbable place to launch a comeback. Here he was, a middle-aged country singer in a Nehru suit, moving to a college town full of scruffy Vietnam War protesters. But he would soon perform one of the most dramatic mid-career transformations in the history of American music.
It was a relief to me when I've seen other people were letting their hair grow and wearing T-shirts, and the audience, I seemed more dressed up than they were, so I said, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to go with where they're at because it's a heck of a lot more comfortable. And bandanas and tennis shoes and blue jeans and T-shirts was a natural for me because that's what I grew up in.
Willie's bold makeover was perfectly timed. The counterculture had been exported from the coast to Texas and the Deep South. Bands like the Grateful Dead and the Byrds were adding a layer of country twang to their swirling psychedelia. Willie signed to Atlantic, not a country label, stripped the strings out of his songs, and replaced them with a blazing honky-tonk sound that was all his own. Fiddler Johnny Gimble played on Willie's Atlantic album, Phases and Stages, which was produced by famed soul producer Jerry Wexler.
Well, it's a bloody merry morning, baby, left me without warning sometime in the night. So I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight.
So we were having a cup of coffee after the sessions, and old Jerry says, you know, Willie, I don't know if you realize it, but this is the first country album I ever produced. And Willie said, well, it's the first rock and roll album I've ever sung.
Well, it's a bloody merry morning, cause I'm leaving baby somewhere in L.A. Well, it's a bloody merry morning, baby, left me without warning sometime in the night. So I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight.
airborne and Flight 50 cuts a path across the morning sky. And a voice comes through the speaker reassuring us Flight 50 is the way to fly. And a hostess takes our order, coffee, tea, or something stronger to start off the day. Well, it's a bloody merry morning, 'cause I'm leaving baby somewhere in L.A. Baby left me without warning sometime in the night. So I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight. Yeah, I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight.
The album barely registered nationally at the time. Still, Willie was creating quite a commotion in his home state. The crowds kept getting bigger and bigger.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Texas Opera House. Whiskey River don't run dry. You're all I got, take care of me.
Willie's longtime road manager, Pootie Locke, started out as a fan, swept up in a kind of movement.
The country was changing. The war was over, you know, and people were tired of the war and they wanted to do something to have fun. And it was an identity thing, you know. You were a hippie out of Haight-Ashbury in the 60s, late 60s, and then you were a Texan, so you put on a straw cowboy hat and still had long hair. You could still drink beer and go to honky tonks.
On stage, Willie's performances were electric, loud, and spontaneous, like a redneck Grateful Dead show. And when Willie returned to the studio, everyone expected a rock-oriented album. But his 1975 release, Redheaded Stranger, sounded like it could have been recorded at his grandparents' farm.
In twilight glow I see blue eyes crying in the rain. When we kissed goodbye and parted, I knew we'd never meet again. Love is like a dying ember, and only memories remain. Through the ages, I'll remember blue eyes crying in the rain.
This was the record that would put Willie back on top, over the top, in fact. This was his first number one as a solo artist, a crossover hit, but more than just that. Up to this point, Willie Nelson really was the redheaded stranger. But after this album, he'd be on a first-name basis with all of America. Redheaded Stranger was a watershed for Willie Nelson, for a guy who grew up in the country, went to the big city, ultimately to find success right back where he started, playing stripped-down gospel-inspired music with his sister at the piano. This journey back home was not just a musical metaphor for Willie. It also underscored how contemporary country music had lost its way. In its search for mainstream acceptance, country music had gone pop. Willie, on the other hand, was making music for himself, and it rang with a kind of authenticity that Nashville just couldn't fake. That also made Willie a renegade unpredictable, maybe a little threatening even. But to Willie, the outlaw label meant getting beyond labels.
Freedom to do what we want to do. A lot of people look at it like we rob banks, but, you know, we don't do that all the time.
He's got the funniest sense of humor.
Singer-songwriter Kris Kristofferson.
I remember once I was opening for him. I would do about an hour, and then he'd come out and do his show. But at the end of my set, he would come on stage, and we'd sing some duets. And I had laryngitis at the time, and I remember saying, "God, I'm so glad you're here. I'm losing my voice." And he just looked at me dead serious. He says, how could you tell?" He's got a very fast sense of humor.
Long about the time outlaw became a marketing term for any long-haired country singer, Nelson did it again, confounding everyone's expectations with an album of American standards.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you.
Stardust would yield 3 number one hits and stay on the charts for a decade. He bought a ranch outside of Austin, built his own recording studio, started going into movies and television.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again.
In 1985, Willie co-founded Farm Aid, a benefit concert for family farmers, alongside Neil Young and John Mellencamp. Though, as Mellencamp remembers it, there's never really been any doubt who's in charge.
It was the first Farm Aid, and there were a lot of news people there, and there were a lot of fans there. We were in the middle of a great big football stadium, and there were, after the news conference, I walked briskly and directly back to Willie's bus. I couldn't leave until Willie got back to the bus. And I looked out the window, and Willie's signing autographs, and Willie's talking to people, and Willie's shaking people's hands. About a half an hour later, Willie gets back to the bus. And of course, you know, at that time I was like 30 years old, very impatient. And I said, "Nelson, we're waiting on you. Where the hell you been? What have you been doing?" He goes, "Something you should think about doing." And what he meant was being nicer to your fans.
By the late 80s, Willie certainly seemed in charge of his destiny. But then the IRS came calling with a $16 million unpaid tax bill. And on top of that came the darkest moment of Willie's life. In December 1991, Willie's oldest son, Billy, was in financial trouble again. This time, his father couldn't bail him out, as he had in the past. On Christmas Day, Willie's son, Billy, took his own life. Biographer Joe Nick Potoski says Willie's oldest son was always in and out of trouble and never able to emerge from his father's shadow.
I talked to a friend of his up in Ridge Top, and he was telling me the story about him, Billy, getting a job at a factory in Nashville. He kind of liked the job. And he said after a couple of weeks, they figured out he was Willie Nelson's son, and he got promoted over a guy that had been there 20 years, and it tore him up. I mean, Billy never found his place, and I think Willie, just as he was going through his career, he wasn't there all the time for him. He tried, but he wasn't there. And he took his life at one of the lowest points of Willie's life, which was in the middle of the IRS troubles.
To this day, Willie has refused to talk publicly about his son's suicide, except for these remarks to NPR.
Right after my son died, I had a gig booked in Branson, Missouri. It was on New Year's Eve, and he died on Christmas, so it would have been real easy for me to cancel and go off somewhere and you know, grieve alone somewhere for months or a long time. I could have done it. It would have been the easiest thing to do. But I didn't. I just knew instinctively that my best place to be with somewhere on the stage. And it just so happens that I had a six-month gig there in Branson. So I had 6 months, and I think it was the best place for me, especially at that time.
Bobby Nelson is Willie's big sister, lifetime musical partner, and closest friend.
Losing his son really affected him. It's something you don't get through with. If you can just hang in there long enough, just keep the spirit inside you and keep the faith.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see.
If you're trying to figure out why Willie is the way he is, you really can go back to the small town that he grew up in Abbott, Texas.
Michael Hall of Texas Monthly.
The Abbott Methodist Church that he grew up in singing was put up for sale, and it was in danger of being moved out of town. He bought the church, and today they have services there, and he still sometimes goes back there. There's one store in Abbott, the Abbott Cash Grocery. It was also in danger of being sold. He bought the store because he said a community needs a store. And now they call it Willie's Abbott Cash Grocery. I mean, he has this loyalty to the people and to the place that he grew up in that is true. It's who Willie is now is inextricably linked to where he came from.
The story of Willie Nelson seems a long way from over. In the past 15 years alone, he's released some of his best and most sophisticated music. He continues to take creative risks and remains one of the most prolific songwriters in the world. And Willie's audiences, they don't seem to be getting older, just bigger.
You know, young people keep getting turned on to him.
That's singer-songwriter Nora Jones.
Some people will think of Willie and think about all the good he's done with Farm Aid and the biofuel and all that stuff. You know, he just kind of sets a good example, and he's a good spirit and a good guy, and has made some amazing music that's influenced so many people over the years, and he's still doing it.
Willie and his co-conspirator of 80 years, Sister Bobby, still play more than 100 shows a year with no sign of letting up. And though Willie seems happiest in the bus or on the road again, what defines Willie Nelson, like nothing else, is home. Amazing Grace, the story of Willie Nelson, was a production of Texas Music Matters at KUT and KUTX in Austin. I'm David Brown. Thanks for joining us.